Today's daf is Daf Kuf. We're up to Daf Tzadik Tet Amud Beit, and we're going to just review briefly a sugya that we had back in the first parak when we started learning, because it's nogea this entire sugya, and that is Omar Rava, one line up from the bottom, Pshitali Ma'im Agabi Ma'im Haino Hanachatan. So another question is, we talked about a bar, how deep the bar is, something that you would throw into the bar that would be mevatel the bottom of the bar. Then we got into the question of the Dvela Shmena, which would be this fruit. And we said, since you're not Mevatel that, it would not be Mevatel the distance between the thrower and the target. So even though the fig does jut into the four Amas of Rishus HaRabim, it's not going to be Memayit, the Rishus HaRabim. And that was the sugya that now triggers this. So how about if there's water and something lands on the water? So that is considered to be, if you throw a cup of water, just the water, into an area that has water on it, which is a Rishus HaYachid, and you throw it from the Rishus HaRabim, that would be considered to be a Hanocha. It's also clear to me, says Rava, that something that is not normally placed in that kind of situation, let's say a nut, you throw a nut onto the water, it's floating on the water. Floating on the water is not considered to be hanocha. But what I am not sure about, says Rava, is whether hanocha is that something is supposed to be at rest relative to the earth, or something is supposed to be at rest relative to whatever space is local for that item. So suppose I take a nut and I throw the nut onto a floating bowl. The nut is at rest relative to the bowl, but the nut is not at rest relative to the earth. So is Hanocha measured locally, or is Hanocha measured by the local planet? Boy Rava, egoz bekli veklit saf agabi mayim mahu. Miyamrinan batar egoz azlinan v'anayech. So do we say that it's all relative? Hanocha is only relative, and they're relative to the kli it's nayach, or Dilma, but a kli azlina v'holo nayach. This was a question we raised earlier, and in fact, teku. Shemen agabe yayin. Now, when it comes to one liquid on another liquid, now that's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, unless we could consider it to be all one thing, we're not going to give it a din of hanocha just because it happens to be a liquid. I mean, the bottom line is it's not nach. If you view all liquids as being, because of the molecular structure, being associated as one object, because together they will take the position, they will take the shape of whatever container they're in, so then that boils down to a very interesting machlokas that we have in the Masechet Tful Yom between Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri v'Rabbanan. We had this earlier in the Masechet as well. D'tnan, let's say you have oil, which will float on wine, and a Tful Yom touches the oil. So the question is, over here, the oil and the wine are both truma. Tfuyom touches it. A tfuyom will passel truma. He touched the oil. Did he passel the wine? So basically, this is the question that we're raising. Do we view the oil and the wine, because of the fact that they're two liquids, as being one body, and because of that, the whole thing would become possible because in a year the tfuyom, or do we view them as being separate? Now, that would be exactly the issue that we would need to determine over here in order to establish whether the oil was nach agabe the yayin or not. And in fact, that's a machlokas. So the Tanakhama says, lo pasal ala shemen. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, no, it's all one thing, and therefore all of the truma is pasal. Omer Abaye bor bereshut rabim, amuka asara v'rechava shmona. Let's imagine a case. We've been talking about the case of Rabbi Yochanan, where we had one bar. It was exactly 10 tefachim deep. It was exactly, well, it didn't matter to us how wide it was, but it was exactly 10 tefachim deep. And what he did was he added this piece on the bottom that covered the entire bottom, and now the bar is only 9 tefachim deep. So we wanted to know whether we say that the loss of the din of the Rishus HaYachid, which requires 10 tefachim depth, and the Hanocha of what he threw in, does that occur at the same instant, in which case there was never a Hanocha in a bar of Eser? Or do we view the Hanocha as the landing? So the landing was into a bar that was 10. And it's true that the instant that it lands, it's no longer a bar of 10 because you're mevatel, that piece that fell into the bar to be there permanent. Let's say it's a tile or whatever that covers over the bottom of the bar. Now, that was a question that Rabbi Yochanan raised yesterday. A similar question is being addressed over here by Abaye. And Abaye says, look, you can have the same question in terms of the width of the bar, because let's say you have a bar that's precisely a 8 by 4, right? So the idea over here is that if you throw in a mat and you put it precisely in the middle, now the mat you put onto the sides in such a way that now you've got slightly less than 4 by 4 on either side because of the thickness of the mat. So you could have exactly the same issue over there. The mat, as it lands, is landing, and it's coming to a hanocha. But when it lands, it's landing in a non-rishus hayachid, because neither side is rishus hayachid the moment the machatzelet is there. So on the one hand, this is the issue that Rabbi Yochanan raised. And to Abaye, there's no question at all. The din over here is that if you threw the machatzelet onto the ground, then you would be chayev. But if you put the machatzelet directly in the middle and it splits the bar into two parts, then you would be potter. So there's two issues over here. First of all, Abaye is arguing here on Rabbi Yochanan because Rabbi Yochanan was not sure. Rabbi Yochanan said, look, I don't really know whether we would say that it's the landing that's the hanocha or the landed that's the hanocha. According to Abaye, it's clear that he holds that it's the landed that creates the hanocha. And therefore, he says you would be potter. But there's another interesting issue over here that you need to consider. Remember that Rabbi Yochanan was also the author of the din of the sticky figgy that we spoke about yesterday. And we said that that little figgy is not going to be mamayit, the area between the thrower and the wall where it sticks to, because it's not meant to stay there. Well, if Rabbi Yochanan only asked what the din would be in terms of a chulia, remember, this is not the same chulia that was at the schoolyard. This is the chulia that's at the bottom and that fills up the bottom of the bar. So now that chulia is a case where it's definitely going to stay there. That would mean that he did not even want to raise the issue on something that was not part of the bar. Now, a machatzelet is not part of the bar. And to say that the machatzelet would be mevatel, that Rabbi Yochanan didn't even raise that question. Now, it's probable that he didn't raise that question, not simply because he wanted to avoid mixing two possible issues, because oftentimes we will put in a complex question that includes two questions. A, is there such a thing as an instantaneous loss of the shame of the rishus together with the landing? And B, do we say that something that is not of the same material that's going to remain there forever, that that would be considered to be enough to be mevatel, assuming that such bittul is possible? What we're assuming now, therefore, is that Rabbi Yochanan didn't raise the issue of a machatzelet is because it was not an issue to him. For sure, the machatzelet would be the same as the sticky fig. Mashenken Abaye, who talks about a case of a machatzelet, which is certainly not a permanent fixture of a bar, but it's also not something that is as temporary as a sticky fig, obviously. So there's two issues over here that Abaye is arguing on Rabbi Yochanan. Issue number one is that to him, it's clear. There's no doubt that it goes according to the landed and it does not go according to the landing. And furthermore, something which is going to remain there for an extended period is also considered to be just the same as a chulia. And he would have extended Rabbi Yochanan's question, although he would have answered it as well, he would have extended it to include even the case of the machatzelet. So therefore, says the Gemara, look, I mean, there's another thing over here, which was according to Rabbi Yochanan, who was asking what the status would be of a chulia. I mean, for sure, a machatzelet, there was nothing even to ask. He was clear about that, that a machatzelet is certainly not going to be mevatel, a mechitza, but for another reason. That's because it's a fig. The Omer Abaye, let's imagine a case where we have a bar that has the proper measurements to be a reshut hayachid, except, which is quite common in a bar, it is a cistern and it's filled with water in the cistern. If you threw something into it that lands on the bottom, so you throw a rock into it, the water is not considered to be something that is going to cancel the mechitzas of the bar. It doesn't fill in the hole, because the point is that the hole is still usable in terms of me being able to put things on the bottom. I don't have to worry about the fact that there's water in it. On the other hand, suppose it was filled with peirot, mizorak l'tocha, then you would be putter. Why is this? Because mayim indeed is not mevatel a mechitza, because it remains completely usable. Peirot are mevatel a mechitza. Now, of course, the obvious question is, why are peirot different than sticky figgy? That's exactly the question that Tosis asks. I mean, if the fig wasn't enough to be mevatel when it was stuck to the side of the wall, why are the peirot enough to be mevatel mechitza the bar just because they're inside the bar? So Tosis says that what we're talking about over here is produce. We're not talking about apples that are going to rot there in the bar. We're talking about something that fills the bar up and that is meant to stay there for quite some time. I may store it for a year in that bar, whatever. And that would be the difference. Now, this is sort of an iffy kind of answer. Now, other Rishonim give a very, very important answer, which has immense ramifications to the inyan of Erevin Bichlal and the big shaila about the New York Manhattan mechitza of the shoreline and so on. And that is as follows. What they say is that the key here is transparency. Water, the transparency of the water, is the reason that you're not mevatel mechitza. The non-transparency of the peirot is the reason that the peirot are mevatel mechitza. And the yesod over here being that the mechitzas of a rishus hayachid need to be perceivable in order for the space to be defined by the person so that he can know that he's in that space. Now, this leads to tremendous questions, because it would mean that a space that is too large for you to be aware of the fact that you're surrounded by mechitzas is not considered to be rishus hayachid. Now, this would have a lot to do with the Gemara that's coming up, and that's all of these sugyas are going to turn out to be related, even though they're different mishnayas. And that is the question of what is the status of the ocean? Right? Now, we said before that the ocean is considered to be a karmelit. Why isn't the ocean a rishus hayachid? I mean, it's miles deep, so it's got very good mechitzas, right? So why would that not be a great rishus hayachid? So one approach is the Rav Moshe Feinstein approach, which is certainly true in certain places, which is that the continental shelf is not sharp enough, because we're going to see, again, on this stuff, we're going to see the precise relationship of height to the amount of height that's necessary for the amount of spread that's necessary for a gain in height. And that's something that Richie and I were Isaac in a great deal on the island. Do we have Rishus Hayachid? We had to measure out areas that would be precisely 10 tefachim high within 4 amas long. And that you don't have, says Rav Moshe, on the continental shelf around Manhattan Island, in which case it's not considered to be a mechitza bichlal. But others learn that because of the fact that you are not aware of those mechitzas when you're in the yam, that is, they're not considered to be mechitzas at all. So then the question is, if that's true, I mean, if you're in an Erev in a city, you also are not aware of the mechitzas at all. I mean, if you see them, they may be a mile away, the Erev. This is a whole question of whether this, the halacha of something not being considered to be a mechitza if they're not visible, does that apply even to a mechitza that is made particularly by the person for the purpose of carrying? Or over there, is it absurd to say, what do you mean you're not aware of that? I mean, you made it or your shliach made it. So in that case, it would certainly function as an Eruv. Anyway, all of these questions are central to the Eruvin problems, where the Eruv also includes the continental shelf as part of the Eruv, which is very common. Anyway, going on into the sugya over here. So because of that, we have these two basic approaches as to why it is the difference between our case and the case of the fig that we had before. So the peirot are mevatim. Mechitza tanina mihachi, hazorek min hayam leisrat yam, min hayisrat leyam patur. If you throw from a highway that's running along the seashore, and you throw from there into the yam, so then it, or vice versa, or from the yam into the highway, you would be potter from a chatas. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, im yesh b'amakom shezorak, amok asara, v'rochav arba'a, then you would be chayev. If you throw something onto a bore which is on the sea floor, right? So then, even though they were filled up with water, you would be chayev. It's only because you threw into the yam as a whole. But if you have a limited mechitza, which is a hole on the bottom of the shore, let's say somebody dug for, you know, purposes of deep swimming near the shore or whatever, then even though it's covered with water, you would be chayev, which basically is what Abaya said. Water is not mevatel mechitza of asara tefachim. Okay, Sir Richard, we're ready to go. Beautiful. So now, at long last, we get to the Mishnah that we have been hoping for the past, nearly 100 days. Oh my gosh. And that is the question that we raised back in the first parak and that we just reviewed again today. Hazorek arba amot bekota. We're back to the sticky figgy. So somebody throws 4 amos in Rishus Rabim and he throws against a wall. Now, the original assumption is if you throw something against a wall, that whatever you threw against the wall is going to bounce back. And there's no way that it landed on the wall, which is vertical. So if you throw it to, it's lamala mi'asara tvachim, it's 10 tvachim above the ground. So then, as we know, Rishus HaRabim doesn't extend above 10 tvachim, and therefore it's as if you threw something into the air and it stood in the air. I mean, you would be potter. But if it lands lamata mi'asara tvachim, then it's as if you threw it, indeed, arba amos, ahead of yourself in Rishus HaRabim, you would be chayev. And because that's the din, if you throw arba amos Rishus HaRabim on the ground, you're chayev. How is this possible? Asked the Gemara. Holo nach, it never came to rest against the wall. It must have bounced back. No, says Rabbi Yochanan. Here we finally get to the actual primal case that we've been using. We're talking about a sticky figgy bidvela shmeinashaninu, and that sticks to the wall. It doesn't bounce back, which raised the question that we said yesterday. So if that's the case, why isn't it memai at the distance? We said it's not memai at the distance because of the fact that it's not meant to stay there. He's not mevatel to the kotel, and raises all of the issues of the kluta in the avir. Is it considered to be resting on the ground? Can we call something resting when it's not gravitationally resting? All of the issues that we raised earlier. On review to Omer Rav, Omer Rabbi Chiya, Zorek lamala mi'asora, v'olcha v'nacha b'chor kosho. Suppose somebody throws something from a Rishus HaRabim, and it lands in a little hole in the wall. So now, this is something else, because over here, the question would be, is a hole in the wall part of the Rishus HaRabim? Does it constitute a Rishus HaYochit for itself? That's not the case of the sticky figgy. It gets us involved in some other problems, namely, Banu l'machloket Rabbi Meir v'Rabbanan. This brings us right smack bang up to the, again, this is a sugya that we had earlier, at the same time that we explored that first sugya over here, we explored this one as well. So this will be very familiar to you. So according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir says, and this was a question about a mezuzah, what do you do about a door? A door also needs to be 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide. Same din as Rishus HaYochid. And what if the door is an archway? So at the bottom of the archway, you do have 4 tefachim. And if you measure from the top of the arch down to the ground, you do have 10 tefachim. But as the archway starts to curve up, it no longer has 4 tefachim. Is that considered to be a doorway or not? Well, obviously, in terms of the actual space that's available for you, you don't have the requisite measurements. Nonetheless, Rabbi Meir says a very important yesod, which goes right into your list of munachim, and that is chokekin lahashlim. We basically hollow things out in order to complete the necessary shiur. And that would mean that we virtually dig out the sides, hollow out the doorway, so that now we do have an area that is virtually 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, which is exactly what we would need for the door. But if that's the case, we would do the same thing for the wall. If we've got a hole and the wall is actually a thick wall, which is very common in the wall that borders the Rosh Hashanah, so then we would say, look, it may well be that you don't have arba al arba here because the hole is too small, but what we can do is we can hollow out that hole, so now it becomes arba al arba by virtually increasing the size of the wall. Now, Tosas, back at the beginning, where we started dealing with this sugya, which was on Daf Zayin, Tosas points out that this is ridiculous. The only din that Rabbi Meir said about chokekin lahashlim is where you have the beginnings of the correct shear. So we said over there, you need at least 3 tefachim off of the ground that were, in fact, 4 tefachim wide, without any question. We're not going to make it wider if we don't have a beginning. I mean, what are we saying? That anytime you have a little tiny hole in a wall, Rabbi Meir says, that hole is Rishus HaYachid because Chokin LaHashlim. Why in the world would we? That's not Chokin LaHashlim. We never started. LaHashlim means to complete. Over here, where did we start? Therefore, Tosfos says, what we're talking about over here is a standardized wall that borders Rishus HaRabim. And that's why we're saying Chokin LaHashlim. The standard wall bordering Rishus HaRabim is always 4 tefachim thick as an absolute minimum. And again, most people in modern countries are not used to those kind of measurements because all of the materials are essentially artificial materials. But over here in Eretz Yisrael, that is for sure very, very standard, where you're using thick natural stone. And over there, of course, you're going to have arba tefachim. But what's more, says Tosfos, another common feature of a wall that borders Rosh Hashanah is, and this you see this also as well here, is that on the side of the inside facing the house, you have window-like affairs that narrow towards the outside and leave just a slit that is open to the Rosh Hashanah. So that on the inside, you've got areas that are usable on the wall, and they're 4 tefachim wide at least. And on the outside, all you see is a little chor. All you see is a little hole. Because people don't want their people in the Rosh Hashanah being able to stick their hands in, obviously. So they have a little chor to allow for air passage. There is a classic chokekin lahashlim. Because on the other side, you really do have an arba al arba in that wall. And because of that, Tainez Tosfos, there is where Rabbi Meir would say chokekin lahashlim, not just Tom, any old chor in any old material is going to consider chokin lahashlim. That is a complete violation of the whole din. So therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, it says chokin lahashlim, if it lands in that type of standardized chor, on that type of standardized wall between Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah, then we would say that it's considered to have landed in a Rosh Hashanah, because of that, the guy who threw it into the chor would be chayev. According to the Rabbanan, who say, in chokekin lahashlim, you would not be chayev, because you don't have arba al arba. Tanya nami yachi, zorek lamala mihasorav, halcham enacha b'chor kolshu. The din is, Rabbi Meir is mechayev. Here, Rabbi Meir says it openly. Rabbi Meir is mechayev, and the chachomim pater. Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Richie, this is one that you should pay close attention to because we've used this halacha literally dozens of times. Tel hamitlaket asara mitoch arba mezorak v'nach al gabav chayav. The din that defines a mechitza. How straight up does the mechitza have to be? Definitely not a 90-degree mechitza. In fact, if we have even a driveway, and that driveway within the space of 4 amos has a rise of 10 tefachim, then that is a mechitza. And because of that, if somebody would throw across the driveway onto the area that's on the top of the driveway, he would be chayev because it is a rishus hayochid. We don't say, well, it's too gradual to be rishus hayochid. In fact, if it would be more gradual than that, we would view it simply as a extension of the rishus harabim. The rishus harabim is moving up and down. There could be a hill, there could be mounds, it doesn't matter, as long as they're not set aside from the rishus harabim. Tanya nami harchi, and indeed, it says this in a brayta, mavu sheshavela tocho. Here we have an interesting situation. Normally, we would need, if we have a mavu, remember that a mavu is an alleyway onto which open various chatzerot or batim, and then they are going to go from that mavoi into the rishus harabim. Now, because of the way that it's so easy to confuse the rishus hayochid aspect of the mavoi with three mechitzos, which nonetheless is an alleyway that everybody's driving their car down and so on. So because of that, the rabbanon were mitakein that in order for you to make a sheet of mavoot to allow you to carry there, you would need to have a lechi or a korah at the end of the mavoi. But in this case, you have a driveway at the end of the mavoi. So we can imagine two possibilities. The mavoi is built on a level that is higher than the associated rishus harabim, and there's a driveway that goes down at the end of the mavoi into rishus harabim, or vice versa. The rishus harabim is actually high, and in order to be able to drive your car down to the doorway of your chutzah, you have a driveway going down once you enter into the mavoi from rishus harabim. In either of these situations, says the Braita, that you've got a mavoi which is flat inside and has a driveway going into rishus harabim, or vice versa, it's flat on the same level as rishus harabim, and it has a driveway going down into it, that mavoi does not need a lechi, does not need a korah, and it's considered to be a wall, because again, the driveway is sharp enough to be an incline that is asara betoch arba amot. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel omer, any time that you have a tell, that's mitlaket asara mitoch arba, v'zarak v'nachal gabav, you would be chayev. It's not only the case of the mavoi, it would be even if the entire hill is built that way, the entire thing is considered to be a rishus harabim. A rishus hayochid, sorry. So if you throw from the rishus harabim, Richie, we're getting the principessa. La principessa. Okay, but we are ready for you. If you could get the area around a little bit quiet so we can hear you.
It's not the principessa.
I know, it's the kids. Yes. Go for it.
We'll give a quick
Phew, boy, that was really quick. Zorak letoch arba amot v'nit galgel. See, we have an interesting situation. A guy throws, he's sitting in a rishus harabim, he's throwing something to a point that is 4 amos, within 4 amos of where he's standing. And this thing that he throws is actually picks up some wind and it goes outside of the arba amot. Then he would be patur. If he throws outside of arba amot and it turns out that it's picked up the wind and it is pushed back and it rolls back to him within 4 amos, he would be chayav because he threw out. Now, obviously, we're going to have to be talking about, in order to be mechayav, and we're going to have to be talking about somehow this thing was nach outside of the 4 amot. So it isn't clear what's happening. It must be that we're talking about that it came within shloshet tvachim, of the ground. It's considered to be munach on the ground, and that would mean, as we'll see, we're going to get into the question of whether we say kluta kamishu unchadamya, even where it is moving. So we've talked about 6 different situations of kluta kamishu unchadamya, and the truth is Reb Kiveger has a beautiful kuntres that he wrote about a whole book, a thin book, only on the issue of Kluta Kamisha Unchadamya. That's how many fascinating cases we have. I see I'm getting Moshe Forman interested because he loves Reb Kiviger. Get online and see if you can download his Kutras al Inyan HaKluta. Okay, so I asked the Gemara, wait a minute. How can he be chayev if it never landed? You don't have to do it right now, Moshe. Come back on. So we know what's going on. So it never landed. I mean, if you're talking about it, the thing got hit by the wind and it was blown back. So why would you be chayev? Reb Yochanan, no, it's talking about that actually it did land for an instant on something or other, not on a Mokam Arba al Arba, but since it was within Sholosh, that is considered to be Hanocha. Now, this is not really absolutely true because it doesn't actually need to land on something. It just needs to be able to be visibly stationary for a moment. So obviously we could say, okay, I mean, use calculus and figure out that when it is that the wind pushed it back, I mean, we're talking about a point which we consider it to be at rest, that's not enough. But if we actually were able to view this thing and it would be at rest, it would also be fine. It doesn't have to actually touch something. If the wind pushed it back to within the Arba Amos, then even if the wind brings it back outside, then he would be potter. But if the wind was able to hold it for a moment, achazato haruach mashu, where they held it in place, then even if in the end it was blown back to within four amas and never went out of the four amas again, then he would be chayev, because in fact it was nach outside of the arba amas. Omar Rava, well, now, there's a big machlokas about this. Because remember, we had the Machlokas, Rabbi Akiva, and the Rabbanan about Kluta Kamisha Unchadamya, when something is rolling even within three amas of the ground, or is being thrown within three amas of the ground. There may be difference, which remember, rolling and throwing were two different cases, as Tosis pointed out before, of Kluta Kamisha Unchadamya. But in any event, I mean, if something is within Shlosha Tvachim, the Rabbanan who argue on Rabbi Akiva, they hold that it would actually need to have a momentary hanocha, even though it doesn't need to, they agree that within Shlosha obviously is lova to the karka, that nobody argues about. However, they hold that it isn't nach because it's moving, and they don't hold kluta, kemishun chadamya, while it's moving. And therefore, according to Rabbanan, it would need at least hanocha masha, which is what you were saying. Yosef Marema, so Marema was saying over what Rava just said, and he was saying it over in front of Ravina, and Ravina says to Marema, now wait a minute over here. The Mishnah said that. The Mishnah back on the figgy. The Mishnah we just had, which is Rabbi Yochanan's comment, and Rabbi Yochanan says that it's talking about it was noch agabe mashu, right? And so then why did Rabbi Yochanan need to say this if it would have been within Shlosha Tvachim and the din would have been that we would say Kluta Kmishuncha according to the Rabbanan, if it's within Shlosha? Obviously because the idea is that the Rabbanan hold, you don't even say Kluta Kmishuncha but Tok Shlosha if something is actually moving. Omar Lay, Marima said back to Ravina, you're saying that the din in the Mishnah is the same as the case. I mean, over there, we're talking about something that was mitgalgel in the ruach, right? They're not the same at all as the case that you're talking about, where something is actually going to come at to rest. Because something that is mitgalgel, something that's been picked up by the wind. Remember, the din of kluta may include the fact that the trajectory is a trajectory leading to hanacha. But the case where something was picked up to the wind, it does not have a trajectory any longer. It's being moved. So over there, that would be why Rabbi Yochanan said something without a specific trajectory, the Rabbanan would say that it needs to be munach agabe mashu. Of course, But that wouldn't tell you the din of Rava. Midgalgel ain't so full of nuach, it doesn't have a trajectory that's going to bring it to rest, and therefore, of course it needs to have an actual hanacha, but it may well be that in Rava's case where it does have a trajectory, then given the so full of nuach, it's aimed at that spot, so then once it comes within three tefach to the ground, it's considered to already be at rest. How can you compare that case to the case of the Mishnah, for heaven's sakes? Kamash Malan, this is a brilliant difference. Therefore, Rava says that even there, the Rabbanan hold, with a trajectory or without a trajectory, Moshe Forman, your eyes are closing. What's going on here? That nonetheless, it has to be at rest for a moment. Oh, Sir Richard.
Boy.
All right, moving on now into the sugya that we had before about water, oceans, puddles, and so on. Hazorik biyam arba amot. So now somebody throws, said the yam is not considered to be a rishus hayochid. It's not considered to be a rishus harabim either. We view it as a carmelite. And it's a carmelite. It's not quite clear, by the way, why it's a carmelite. I mean, we said yesterday, or 2 days ago, that there are currently 96,000 boats on the sea. Now, if there's 96,000 boats on the sea, that gave us 440,000 sailors that are currently at sea. This became very important during the corona epidemic because these poor guys are stuck at sea. They can't come in because most of the countries are not allowing them to come in. And therefore, the captains are in big trouble because many of them have been at sea too long. And just like a pilot in a plane is not allowed to be flying more than a certain number of hours, the same thing is true of seamen. They're not allowed to be at sea for more than 11 months. So this is becoming a real emergency in terms of maritime traffic. Anyway, so as you see, everything is Nogea the Daf Yomi. And so the question is, with those number of people on sea, why wouldn't the sea be a super-duper Rishus HaRabim? Now, this would be, of course, another question, which is Nogea. Why isn't every highway, which is a beltway in cities, I mean, it's barely a city in the world that doesn't have a beltway. That beltway is utilized easily by 600,000 people. And therefore should meet the requirements for Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa, and therefore destroy the Eruvin, and we shouldn't have any Eruvin anymore. So one of the answers to that problem is that a car is a Rishus HaYochid. And therefore all of these people are not in Rishus HaRabim. They're driving in a car, which is a Rishus HaYochid, which is in Rishus HaRabim. And therefore you cannot say that they're utilizing the Rishus HaRabim. What do you think about that one? So then if that's the case, the same thing obviously would be true about the ships at sea that we speak to from the Daf Yomi. Okay, but this raises the other questions that we had before. It's considered to be a carmelite because you can't see the other side of the yam. Therefore, it's not clear that it has a bechitza to you, or because the continental slope, the shelf, is not sloped properly to be asara betoch arba. Okay, whatever. But and the simplest explanation, which in fact is brought by many Rishonim, is that it's simply eno doma lemidbar. To say the least, about the furthest you can get from the midbar, the Digle midbar is being sloshed about with the mayim in the sea. Okay, so anyway, because of that, if you throw arba amos, the din is you're not allowed to throw the arba amos in Carmelit because we give it to chumras of Rishus HaRabim, but remember that midiraisa said samakam tur, and there are no limitations to hotzah at all. It's not called hotzah, so it's really not a problem. Okay, you'd be put. Now, suppose you have a rekak mayim. Now, here, what we're talking about is basically, even though the way we spoke about the sugya before, it's just talking about a puddle of water. But in context of the Mishnah, what's really happening over here is that very often you get water that will come all the way up at high tide, and it will go over a road that's near the sea. And over there, it's not very deep, but there's water on the road. So suppose there's water on the road and the road simply goes over that area. So the question is, what's the din? If the Rishus HaRabim goes through it, then it's still considered to be part of the Rishus HaRabim, even though there's water in it. And then HaZorek V'tocho Arba Amot Chayav, because that is considered to be similar to the Rishus HaRabim, since roads will often have water on them, and people simply ignore the water and just walk right through it. When we talk about a rekak, I mean, how deep can it be? Kamu rekak mayim, less than asara tvachim. Once it is asara tvachim deep, so then the very fact that it's asara tvachim deep turns it into a karmelis and it's no longer part of the Rishus HaRabim. And now, again, we've spoken about this in the past word for word. We did this entire sugya, so even though it's going to look funny for a moment, you will remember, I'm sure, instantly, that this was the mission that repeated the same words twice, and we tried to figure out what that was all about. And then it says the same thing again. Okay, so it says the same thing twice, and like we did earlier in the Masechet, why does it say it twice? I understand why the Mishnah mentions two times Rishus HaRabim mehalechet bo. Yes, that I understand, because it would want us to recognize that there could be two different levels of hiluch. One would be a convenient hiluch, and which people would pass through it without thinking twice. And the other one is where it's pretty inconvenient. It's not 10 tefachim deep, but still, the water gets into your shoes or whatever. And even so, by repeating it, it's telling me that tashmish, al yedei hadchak, hiluch, al yedei hadchak, is considered to be hiluch. And that teaches me a very important halacha. Remember that we had the shaila earlier in the Masechet. If you have a post, which we just mentioned, if you have a post in Rishus HaRabim, which is 10 tefachim high, nine tefachim high specifically, so then it becomes part of the Rishus HaRabim. It's not considered to be a mokum patur. Why? Because it's an official backpack adjusting post. So therefore, you'll turn around, put your backpack on it, get it on you again, and therefore it's considered to be the tashmish of the Bnei Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara over there entertained the notion that because of the interrelationship of the concave and convex surfaces in the dinim of the Rishuyos, would this be true also about a 9 tefachim deep container where you could store your backpack? And we were medayik from this Mishnah, of all things, that since the only time that we're taught that things that are inconvenient are still considered to be part of the Rishus HaRabim was halicha, it teaches us that only halicha ayedei hadchak is called halicha, but usages ayedei hadchak is not considered usage. That's an important limud, and I understand why you would want to mention the words mahalich. But why mention rekak twice? I mean, yeah, you could have given another example to expand on it. Let me just talk about the same place twice. Yeah. So Rabbi answered that he did earlier. Chad b'yemot ha-chama, v'chad b'yemot ha-geshamim. We need to know that we're taking into consideration all type of inconveniences. And the Mishnah wants to teach us that the dechak could be of different types. Let's say the Mishnah had only said once. I would have said, okay, maybe in terms of walking in a puddle during the summer, okay, people are not worried about that. You know, take off their shoes, walk a little barefoot, cool your toesies as you're walking along, and it's a nice break anyway, you know, and maybe someone will put in one of those massaging machines at the bottom. It'd be really great to walk along to Rishus HaRabim and get a toesy massage as you go. So that would be okay, because Avide inchi demaski la kure nafshel, people love to cool off, but I mean, in the middle of the winter, nobody would walk through this water. So I would say that in that case, it would not have a din of Rishus HaRabim. And on the other hand, so you say, okay, so let the Mishnah just say the case that's the bigger Chiddush, right? No, because I wouldn't know, even if you define the case. Let's say the Mishnah would have said Beferish. We're talking about even in the winter, would have said B'yemot HaGeshamim. I would say, what do you mean, even in the winter? In the winter, everything is filthy and muddy anyway, so you don't really care if it gets a little bit more muddy. But in the summer, where everybody's dressed up for the beach and they got on their all their pretty clothes, then over there they would not want to get all dirty walking through this mud. And maybe it would not be called the Rishus HaRabim. So therefore, just in order to make it clear that no matter what the inconvenience is, it would still be considered to be a Rishus HaRabim. Abaya says, that's not why. It's because Salka Daitra Mina, the reason I say the Rakak twice, because I might have thought that it's only if it's not four amas wide. Arba amot. Once it is four amas wide, I'm going to be in there for a long time. I'd rather walk around. And I understand if I have to go through like this area, okay, I'll take two steps through a pedal, you know, on my toes or on my heels. I don't walk through a big four amas long thing. So then I would rather walk around it. And therefore that would take away its dinner versus a rabbin because people don't like to use it. Kamashmalan, that even if it is arba amas, Rav Ashi says, no, that's not why. The reason that it meant, or could, I shouldn't really say that's not why, because they may all agree to the Chidushim and the Mishnah of the other. Rav Ashi says, it comes to teach me that sal kadaita chamina hanimi lehech dahave arba amas. If the place is at least four tvachim wide, then it becomes a rishus harabim. But if it's not four tvachim wide, so then I'd rather jump over it, you know, and I take like a big hop to get over it in order when walking, instead of walking through it, because that way I can avoid all of these problems, and therefore would not be considered to be part of the rishus harabim. Kamash b'lan, that even so, it's considered to be part of the Rishus HaRabim. Now, this leads to a lot of discussion. Why is it part of the Rishus HaRabim? Rashi says that the Chiddush is that people still walk through it. But, I mean, others learn, especially the Rambam, that the reason that it's Rishus HaRabim is that it's part of Rishus HaRabim, a bottle to it, even though people will not generally walk in it and will walk over it, it's still part of Rishus HaRabim. V'azda Rav Ashi l'taymei, the Yomer Rav Ashi, this is something else Rav Ashi said, which is consistent with what he's saying over here, that Haiman de Zorek v'noch aguda de gamla mechayim, sha'arei rabim bok inibo, which is the same question, how we understand aguda de gamla. We're talking about one plank. The bridges, remember, those days were plank bridges. So even though many people will just jump over that place, they're walking over the plank. Nonetheless, it's considered to be, the plank itself is considered to be part of Rishus HaRabim. Again, either because gufa, people will jump over it, and that makes it part of the Rishus HaRabim, or because many people will use the plank to cross over. And now, once again, we're back to our reluctant Capitan, who has very strict hours and doesn't like to walk overtime. We're going to have to get together to make a donation here for paying for all this overtime. I can't afford all of this, but go ahead. You don't get overtime for all the glissandos and everything. Hazorek min hayam liyabasha. Umin hayabasha liyam. Now, how about if you throw something from the sea onto the dry land, from the dry land onto the sea, or from the sea to a boat, or from a boat into the sea, or if you have two boats on the sea next to each other, and you throw from one to the other, in all of these situations, we do not have a hotzah. Because we said before, the yam is considered to be a karmelis, and therefore it wouldn't matter whether you're going from Rishus HaRabim to a karmelis, Rishus HaYachid to a karmelis, there would be no possible way to be mechuyav. Same thing is true about the ship. The ship you're going to say is Rishus HaYachid, but you're not chayev for taking from a karmelis to Rishus HaYachid, or vice versa. Now, the only issue over here of the ships is that we are worried that if they're not tied together, so then you're not allowed to take from one type of Rishus Yachid to another. However, if the Sfinot are Kishurot Zulazo, and there's not a gap between them, and we are not Choshesh that they're going to float apart because you've tied them together, you would be allowed, if you make an Erev, if they belong to two different people, you could make an Erev Chatzeras between them, and it would be fine. If they're not kosher, the Chiddush over here is, you cannot make an Erev, even though currently the two Rishuyot are next to each other, and therefore, by making the Erev, you're showing that you're all sharing a common table. if they're not tied together and they actually will float apart, there goes your Erev, because it's nonsensical to pretend that you have a common table when the only way to get there is to fly through the air with the greatest of ease, and that does not count towards making an Erev. So because of that, the Erev is batel milechatchila, because it's omed lehitbatel. And in on kshurot, they may be next to each other, ein metatelin mizo lezo at all. Itmar. Svina Revuna Amar Motziinim and Aziz Koshu Umimale. Now the question over here is, how do we get water in and out of a boat? We want to get water into the boat because we would like to drink. We want to get water out of the boat for obvious reasons. So what do we do to get water into the boat? Itma. Svina Revuna Amar Motziinim and Aziz Koshu Umimale. All you need to do is you put out a little tiny shelf, could be even like a pole, and you can fill up a bucket onto that pole and bring it into your boat. Rav Chista v'Rabba bar Ravuna Amre, you need to actually make an area of 4 tvachim by 4 tvachim, a frame, and put it over the yam, and inside that frame, we view the water beneath it as being part of a Rishus HaYochid. Now, the Maisa in Erevin, it's clear that the frame has got to be there. We talk about Venice, and your porch is over the water. And the question over there is, can you carry out from the canal in Venice up to your porch? And over there it says you would need to have 10 tefachim sticking down over the water, and then we view those 10 tefachim as continuing on into the water. That would make it Rishus HaYochid, but not just a token frame. And the Mefarshim or Mechalek, actually not everybody agrees with Rashi, who says you only need a token frame. Some learn this to be the same as the case in Erevin in Venice. But the difference between them, according to those, and there's many shittas that go, or much earlier shittas than Rashi, actually, from the time of the Gaonim, you do not require 10 tefachim, is because the Chazal, remember the Gemara puts it, kula hekilu b'mayim. And wherever we need to make those type of kulas, if we're talking about a boat that is going from place to place, it's sufficient to have a token there to make the karmelit l'chatchila into part of the boat. If you're talking about a porch, which is permanent and it's easy to make over there, a mechitza of asara that's sticking down, so then they were mechayev the asara that's sticking down, but not on the boat. So, okay. So now, what's the machlokas? Ravuna, who says, motzei men aziz koshu memalei, the reason that he says that is because he holds that the karmelit, which is the din of the yam, where do we measure the karmelit from? We measure the karmelit from the sea floor. And if we measure it from the sea floor, and we give the karmelit, remember, the kulais of Rishus HaYochid, the kulais of Rishus HaRabim, then in terms of the asorat tefachim, above the karmelit, it has no din of the karmelit at all. And lamala mi'asorat tefachim, it is a makom ptur. And since you're going to be taking from the top of the water will be 10 tefachim above the sea floor. The Gemara is going to ask, why is that necessarily so? But we'll talk about that. And the avir is a makom ptur, and therefore you really don't even need the pole sticking out, because bedino disease nami loli boy. The only reason we put it there is we want people basically to remember that if it were karmelis, you wouldn't be able to pay attention to where you are. Normally, a makom ptur, we could see very clearly. The case of water, we don't see very clearly that it's a makom ptur, and we need something to remind us that the karmelit started at the bottom of the yam. Whereas Rav Chista and Rabba Bar Avuna Amri, Osa Makom Arba Al Mumale, you need to have an area 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim, at least as a frame, or according to other Rishonim, little kind of funnel, which has a 10 by 4. So, Kasavri Karmelit Misvat Maya Mashkinan, they hold that the 10 tefachim height of the Karmelit is from the actual water, not from the seafloor. And because of that, they view the water is considered to be legabi. This halacha is considered, in terms of the din of the aver karmelis, to be an extension of the ground. So if you didn't make an area that was arba'a, then you would be taking lechatchila from a karmelis into rishus hayachid. So the rabbanon needed to be metaken, a type of very easy mechitza, because remember, the whole idea of requiring a mechitz and a makom patur is a rabbanon invention. And because of that, they could invent even a simple mechitza, which could be a frame to give you the sense that you're bringing the water up through a mechitza. Amar le Rav Nachman l'Rabba bar Ravuna, who says you can rely on just this little fishing rod sticking out, and you could then pull it up, how do you know that you're 10 tefachim from the seafloor? I mean, maybe you're not, right? Maybe Zinadaleka Asar. I mean, how can we make this a blanket heter? Why don't we need to worry that you're within the 10 tefachim and that therefore you would be carrying from a Karmelit to Rishus HaYachid? So how are we being matir at Lechatchil under any and all circumstances? We normally don't travel in an area that's less than 10 tefachim deep in order to have proper displacement. We don't want Richie getting his propeller all tangled up in those weeds, which gets him cursing for the next half hour as he has to pull it up and tear everything out. And so because of that, we want to make sure that we have sufficient area, as has been our experience in so many.
Don't remind me.
Oh, no. Chas v'shalom, Richie.
I'm still waiting to see if I can get there.
Okay. All right. What about the prow of the ship? I mean, there, it could certainly, you don't care if your prow goes over an area that's less than 10 tefachim deep. So what's going to happen if you carry in that area? Says Rav Safra, come on. Richie's boat, without his having fun with the little sonar thing, and he can see exactly where it's coming to an end. So because of that, in the old days, maybe they didn't have their sonar toys, but so then they had poles, you know, going down the Mississippi and testing the depths of the water. So we always have a guy in front to make sure that you're not going to run aground. So we didn't have to worry about that either. Gishurshe Ozle Kama, and Huckleberry Finn would have been happy to go along with Richie on the boat.